And move to case number 3 for this morning, United States against John Lott. Ms. Law?
May it please the Court. This is a case where the District Court committed plain error when it violated the rule under the Sixth Amendment that Mr. Lott be guaranteed an impartial jury, and it violated the rule under the Due Process Clause guaranteeing Mr. Lott a jury that was willing and able to make its verdict based solely on the evidence presented at trial. In this case, veneer person Valeroy vouched essentially for the credibility of one of the government's witnesses, police officer Gary Steele. This vouch occurred within the first 50 pages of the first trial transcript of the first day of trial. It was in response to one of the court's questions about whether any of the veneer persons knew anyone who might be a witness. Mr. Valeroy indicated that he had known Sparta police officer Gary Steele for 20 years. He had worked with him for 20 years. He knew that he was an honorable man. And indeed, his brother, veneer person Valeroy's brother, had been a Sparta Police Department officer himself and knew, moreover, that police officer Steele was one of those upright officers.
Now, Ms. Law, putting to one side for the moment the fact that they later returned to this subject and Mr. Valeroy isn't so dogmatic, if you will, if this is plain error review, and I think you're right that it is, we need to look at this case as a whole. And I have to say, your client, Mr. Lott, was charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm. And the evidence is overwhelming that he, in fact, was in possession of the firearm, and nobody's contesting the fact that he had a prior felony. And in those cases, even if there was a mistake, we would say it was harmless error, harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, we would say.
Judge, I understand that certainly that is, in fact, the government's position, is that the verdict was not because of taint, it was because of the weight of the evidence.
Well, and we do, you would agree that we should take into account the weight of the evidence in a plain error review.
Well, I do, Judge, but I think in this case it was a constructive possession case. The gun was seized from beneath the driver's seat of an automobile in which Mr. Lott was driving. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his car. It's not fingerprinted, for example. There's no other evidence of his direct possession of the gun on that day. And therefore, the evidence was the two police officers, each Officer Steele and Officer Dotson, testified about statements they alleged Mr. Lott made, which were rather incriminating, which goes, I think, to the credibility of those officers, particularly given that the evidence in this case involved five different versions of the main incriminating statement in Officer Dotson's written and handwritten and typewritten police reports, and also in his testimony at a preliminary hearing. The case was originally a Randolph County case.
And it's also, I mean, you challenge it, but it suggests to me that maybe the government wasn't overdoing the case when they introduced Crystal Lyle's testimony about how he sells dummy drugs and he needs the gun for protection.
Well, Judge,
I guess in some ways that looks like icing on the cake, but if there really is this much question about constructive possession, then her testimony is important.
I think the question about the overwhelming weight of the evidence, Judge, is sort of bookended. Veneer person Valeroy's super vouch is sort of bookended by the jury's clear and serious difficulty with reaching a verdict. And that was a jury, I might add, that had a 24-year veteran of the Collinsville Police Department among its members. This is the Pettit jury, the jury that heard the case. The case commenced at Monday afternoon at 2:45, Monday the 8th. The jury was relieved to go to lunch at 11:25 the following morning. We did instruction conference and argued, and the case went to the jury at 2:15 Tuesday the 9th. they immediately started sending back notes. They had problems. They wanted to see the testimony of Crystal Lyle. Sparian, I think, was her married name. They wanted to see the testimony of Bobby Joe Terry. Then they went back out, and then they came back, and they wanted to see the police reports. Then they came back at the end of the day and said, we need more time. I think, Judge, when you talk about a straightforward felon in possession case, the jury was out for longer than it took to put the evidence in. They came back the following morning and immediately requested that the court allow the alternate to deliberate with them, which, of course, the court did not. But the alternate, interestingly, had elected to stay around and find out what was going to happen. At some time thereafter, and unfortunately the transcript stops noting time at this point, but at some point thereafter on Wednesday the 10th at this point, the jury comes back in and says, we're deadlocked. We can't make up our minds. I don't think that's the response of a jury that's got overwhelming evidence in front of it, Judge. With all due respect, I think that's a jury that's really seriously struggling with evidence, and I think that becomes very interesting when you consider that there is a police officer, a retired police officer, Marvin Rushing, on the jury, who in response to the same question by the court during voir dire, how would you weigh the credibility of a police officer, answered very forthrightly, I would weigh that credibility like I would weigh anyone else's, because I've seen, even on my own force, police officers who were good police officers and police officers who weren't so great. And so I think when you put all of that in, I think you're absolutely correct, Judge. We do have to look at this all as a whole. But when I think you, when you do look at it as a whole, you've got a very brief little trial that was constructive possession in someone else's car, in a car, in fact, that Bobby Joe Terry testified many people drove. And in fact, Officer Steele indicated that at the time they stopped this car, I think it was June 28th of 03, it was littered with trash and junk and fast food wrappers and everything else. So, I mean, it was clear that this was a car that was much inhabited. And so I think when you look at it from that standpoint, yes, it's true, there was clearly a felony conviction. That was never at issue. That was never at issue. The gun obviously crossed state lines. But the fact becomes, did he possess it? And then I think, in fact, Crystal Lyle and Bobby Terry's testimony may even sort of muddy the waters, because they both say, yes, we saw him with a gun at some prior time. They both also testified they were with him on separate occasions, I think, or at separate times the night before, and neither of them saw a gun at that time. I see that my rebuttal light is on, and I've deliberately not addressed the second argument. Quite honestly, I think it's well enough covered in the briefs. Obviously, if the court has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them, but
that's
otherwise
fine.
I'll reserve.
Thank you. Mr. Lloyd.
May it please the court. My name is Richard Lloyd. I was the trial counsel down below in this case. Clearly, the government's position regarding the first argument is that the defendant waived the right to make an argument.
Surely we're talking about forfeiture rather than waiver. I mean, we have defense counsel coming to the brink of a challenge against the entire Vannier panel, and then she backs away, and that doesn't happen. But I don't see her saying anything that makes me think of waiver, intentional relinquishment of a challenge.
Your Honor, it's the government's position that the defendant had an opportunity. She never did make the final step of saying, Your Honor, I object to this panel. I move to have this panel dismissed.
That's a forfeiture situation. That's an omission, if you will, rather than an affirmative statement saying the defense is thrilled with this panel or words to that effect.
Well, be that as may, our second part of our that first argument is that even if we look at it as forfeiture, there was no plain error. Clearly, Mr. Valeroy rehabilitated himself. I counted at least six times that the court questioned all the members of the panel, because the panel was broken up in two parts, 18 in the front of the courtroom because of some lighting problems, and then we brought the other 18 back later. They were still in the courtroom, but at least six times the court asked all the jurors if they could be fair, if they would look at the testimony of a police officer in the same light as they would at anyone else. And if we are, as this court has often opined, that jurors follow limiting instructions, I think we also have to assume that jurors tell the truth to the judge. And in this case, they said that they could be fair. Regarding the evidence in this case, it's the government's position that the evidence was overwhelming. This was a constructive possession case. It wasn't the defendant's car, but he had had possession of the car most of the prior 24 hours. When the officers stopped him, they did not see the gun in the defendant's hand. There were no furtive movements. There were no fingerprints. But the evidence that we didn't have is Officer Dotson testified that when he took the gun out of the car, there was a baggie with a plastic tie directly under it, and the baggie moved. We had testimony from Bobby Terry, the owner of the automobile, who testified that she had never seen any baggies with ties on it with white powdered substances in her automobile. She had seen the defendant 2 days prior with a small silver and black handgun thrust down in his waistband, which is kind of interesting because Crystal Sperino, also known as Crystal Lyle, testified that in the latter part of May, early part of June, she had also seen a black handled silver small handgun that was also thrust down into the waistband of the defendant. And at trial, she testified that the gun, which was the gun in the indictment, was the same firearm that she had seen in the latter part of May or early part of June. She also testified that she told the defendant to leave her house, and the defendant came back the next day and explained to her that he had the gun for protection because he had been dealing dummy drugs, and he went on to explain that what he meant was fake drugs that were placed in plastic bags, which dovetails with the testimony of Officers Dotson and Officer Steele, who testified that the defendant identified what was in the bag found in the car as being powdered Allegra. And I think it's clear, there was a clear inference that the jurors picked up on. If the defendant had that automobile for a short period of time, if he knew that the bag that was taken out of the car had the crushed Allegra, and if the handgun was on top of the baggie, the clear inference was that he knew that that gun was there and that was his firearm.
Well, you're suggesting that Crystal's testimony identifying it eventually is the same one she saw, said that it was his.
That's correct. And also, there was further testimony by Officer Dotson when he took the defendant to the Randolph County Jail. While they were in the process of going there, the defendant blurted out that he had gotten the gun shortly before then, which may or may not have been true as to when he received the firearm, but that he did have that firearm for the purpose of robbing another person.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Lloyd. Ms. Law?
I guess just briefly, Judge, again, if this were a case where the jury had been out for an hour, hadn't sent any notes, hadn't indicated any discomfort with the evidence, I suspect that Mr. Lloyd's position would be far strengthened. But in fact, the rehabilitation, so-called, of veneer person Valeroy, during voir dire, obviously, of course, actually, I think, tended to make things worse. The court engaged him in conversations about whether he had ever had any cause to test the credibility of Gary Steele, and in fact, veneer person Valeroy said, I have tested it. We were in the same union. I've disagreed with him before. And this on the heels of having said that this was the most honorable man or an honorable man. Clearly, the testing Mr. Valeroy had done had not resulted in his deciding that Officer Steele was not credible or a liar. I think given the fact that the testimony of these officers was so crucial, there were serious questions about one of the officer's police reports with respect to the statements in particular. Those issues, I think, and given the jury's obvious deep concerns or troubles reaching a verdict, all almost make this case go into a structural error, the kind of which Justice Stevens discussed in his dissent in Alano, infecting the entire structure of the trial. It was a brief trial. This isn't the kind of case where there's a huge judicial ineconomy for it to be sent back. And I think the fact that this vouching for credibility, vouching for reliability, vouching for upstandingness as a police officer, striking Veneer Person Valeroy doesn't cure the taint. He was just the infectious agent. The infection had been already spread in that room. And therefore, I think that but for that taint, there is certainly a possibility that this verdict would have been different, especially given the fact that the jury, at least at a point, almost was hung.
All right. Thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
Oh, I was, yes, Judge.
We appreciate your service very much. Thank you. Our last case for today is submitted on the briefs, so we will take this case under advisement, and the court will be adjourned until Monday morning.